sometimes you find out you're not who you thought you were going to be 20 years ago.
But you realize you are the person you always needed to be.
This is the Wayward Podcast.
You can make
noise. You're allowed to thank you for... Okay.
I want to hear by audience cheers. Wayward growth. Wayward hope. Wayward growth.
I was going to say you're no fucking help at all, but all right. Wayward growth. Wayward growth it is. All right. Okay.
Okay.
Hi, Brianna Buckmaster.
Hi, Kim Rhodes.
We're a little echoey. I'll see if I can fix that with the blippy blips. But the blippy blips are going.
Blippy blips are going. They and have been going.
That's what we'll call our pod attendees.
Our peeps?
Our
blippy
peeps.
Blips?
You want to be blippy blips?
Yay.
You can make noise. You can make noise when I talk to you.
You just can't heckle.
Just don't fucking come up with ideas of your own when we're trying to talk. There's our blippy blips.
Our blippy blips.
It's
stop
blippy
blipping.
Okay, so this is the first ever live recording of the Wayward Podcast in conjunction with Creation Entertainment.
That's right. We couldn't be more excited to be here. So we've gone through some topic ideas, which were yes, no questions from the audience. And based on those, we've made a decision about what this podcast episode is going to be about.
Yes, and we're going to find out together how it goes. It's going to be great, everybody. You
it's
know
gonna
why?
It's going to be great.
Because we're fucking scientists.
God damn it.
Yes, Science. And we're going to talk about time travel today.
And we're
going
to save the world.
We're going to save the world.
So the podcast the audience question was, do you feel, do you feel like you are where you are at? No, this is wrong.
Are you where you saw yourself being 20 years
20
ago?
Years ago.
So like 20 years ago.
And we both answered no.
No.
So tell me why you answered no.
Because I thought I'd be dead by now.
Right.
I was, how old am I now? 53, 43. So 33. Had I met my husband yet? I think I'd met my husband. So no, I had given up deciding I was going to be dead by 50. But I was still truly ensconced in neurotypical standards and societal expectations and the idea that I was going to succeed, and by succeeding, it meant achieving all of these goals that had not actually been set by my heart. They'd been set by society.
Right. Yeah. I feel like a lot of people, maybe not, but I also relate to when I was like, that the question immediately, the only thing I thought about was career. And I think that a lot of people, I wonder if any of you relate to this. When you're young, 20s and 30s, I think, like you're saying, a system that is telling us that we need to be something, become something, look a certain way, whether that's to be a mother, to be married, to be a success, or usually all three.
Rich,
beautiful.
Yeah. And the relationship that you're in needs to look a certain way.
Yes.
And
feel a certain way.
Yeah.
I was 20 years ago, I was 21. And I think that I'd probably just graduated theater school and thought, this is it. Now, it's so funny when you're in your 20s how you feel like you don't have long to make it. Did you have that feeling? I remember coming out of theater school going, I've got to make it soon or it won't happen.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I wonder if that's a thing with just being an actor. I think that women in our industry are like, you gotta be a big deal by the time you're 30 or else you don't exist.
Well, 20 years ago, I was on The Sweet Life. I was doing a Disney Channel show. And I was just the opposite. I thought that once your foot was in the door, you were let into the palace.
Right.
Like,
nowhere to go but
now,
up.
Yes. Yeah. And so I bought a house and I had a lavish wedding and I didn't fucking save my money. Like, I lost that house to foreclosure.
Right.
I don't get residuals. I didn't. And of course, at the time, I wasn't looking at for the next job because I was too busy like, I'm on this job and everything's coming up roses.
Yeah.
And as a result, I didn't fucking work again. And I was like, oh, it's not a linear trajectory. So when they say where you thought you'd be in 20 years, I thought it was done. I did it. I got that first step. Yeah. And now it's an escalator. I'm just going to ride my way
easy,
up.
Easy.
And that is not the fucking truth.
And I wonder if it's like this in other careers where I feel like as an actor, I know we're just talking about careers right now. We'll move on from that. But I'm exactly the same as you, where I assumed I got my big gig and then the next thing would be here. And the next thing would be just above that. And the next thing would just be above that. You just keep going up until you're ready to go, that's good, or you croak or whatever. But it is not. Even throughout the decades that I've been an actor, it is up and down and then up really high and then really steep fall down.
Yeah, it's much more like a pogo stick.
Yeah, and it has nothing to do with anything. That's the thing, is that it's not, it doesn't have to do with your skills, your talents. Has to do a bit with opportunities, but mostly it's just like the way the industry is. And I didn't realize that when I was younger. And so I had a lot of dreams and I had big dreams. I'm still a big dreamer. Like I still think I'm going to be like an Oscar winner. And I don't actually think that, but I choose to just believe that and say that because it's more fun to have those grand beliefs. But when I was young, the idea of what was possible, I grew up on a farm in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. I had a girlfriend the other day say to me, do you ever think about how far you've come and how you got to where you are because my opportunities were so little growing up in a very poor family on a farm in Moose Jaw, Canada? You know, it's very far away from Hollywood. And I was like, no, I'd never thought about that. And I think it's something that I should think about more often because we so often lose perspective of where we've been and how far we've come. And that's why I like this question, is you get to go, no. And I think that I should think about that more often because 20 years ago, 20-year-old me would be pretty fucking stoked. Especially with this, the convention stuff. But at that point, I think she was just trying to hurry up and be somebody. She just needed to be somebody. That's why I think sometimes I'm like, I wish TikTok was around back then. Because what I love about TikTok is you have a whole bunch of people going, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And you're like, oh my God, me too.
Now I have a question. When you talk about where you thought you would be, because when I read this, I was like, oh, this one's going to make me cry. Mm. And for me, this is why I resonated with it. Because when I think about it, 20 years ago, I did not think I was capable of being happy. Mm. I thought not miserable was kind of the best I could hope for. And I didn't even know that's what I thought. Like, I wasn't sober, and I needed to be.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was autistic, and I was trying to make my brain fit into these convoluted, sharp, painful, geometrical shapes when it's a little fucking fish that just wants to be in the water. I was trying so hard to be something I wasn't, and my dreams were like, well, maybe someday I'll be this thing I'm not. And then I might not be miserable. And instead, what happened was now I'm the thing I am. Mm. And I'm happy. And that never fucking occurred to me, that maybe someday who I am would be what I wanted to be. And that's like, that's fucking miraculous.
And what a gift to remind listeners, if they're ever at a point when they're 20 or 30 and they have the same feeling you do, which is, I guess happiness isn't in the cards for me.
you know,
or it depends on this thing.
Yeah.
A thing, and either being that
or
person
getting, yeah.
or getting that thing, and it relies on something outside of me as opposed to getting to know what's inside of me. And being like, because I thought, you know, 20 years ago, I just wanted to run away from what was inside of me.
Sure. Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, no, look at this little funny little magical being.
Do you know what?
It's
I think
like I'm like a dinosaur in a suit.
Oh, you got it in there, baby. You got it in there. I think when I was 21, I was so desperate to know what love felt like. I think that I was using my career, and I was 21, right? I was just out of school, so I didn't really have a career yet, but I had career goals. I've always been a very driven person, but I remember when I was younger, I was bullied a lot for my weight, and I never had a boyfriend. I didn't have a boyfriend until I was 23. It's my first boyfriend. And I remember when I was 21, I really didn't think that love was in the cards for me. And I remember, strangely, if anybody knows anything about Reiki, now my husband is now a Reiki practitioner. This is a very funny story when you remember this, but I went to a massage therapist who also did Reiki, who was also my dance teacher when I was in theater school. So I remember her giving me a massage. We'd hire her to give us massages, and she once said to me, I was very young, and she was like, your body is asking a question. Do you want me to ask it? And I didn't really understand what she was saying. I said, no. You fucking weirdo. And then, you know, a few minutes go by, and she goes, your body is still asking a question. Do you want me to ask it? And I said, okay. And she said, do you believe in love? And I immediately just burst out crying. I think that when I was young, I wanted so badly to be loved, and I had not experienced that. I've experienced familial love, and that even now as I'm older looked a way that I now see as like there was some unhealthy stuff about that, of just like withholding that kind of stuff. But I hadn't experienced a romantic love. And I did have a boyfriend when I was 23, which was a long-distance boyfriend, very, you know, all the things that come with long-distance relationships, but was not a healthy relationship. And then I met my husband. And when I tell you, it's so funny because he listens to this podcast and he's going to hear this. And we talk about it all the time, but he loves me in a way that I'm, at 41 years old, not ready to accept. And I'm constantly resisting it. And so when I think about 20 years ago, about the kind of relationship I would be in now with someone who loves me completely, totally, unconditionally, in a way that I didn't think could exist. And I, you know, have been with him for 15 years, and I still know that I'm not like ready to let that in. But 21-year-old me would be like, oh man, I didn't know that existed. And she would, it's so funny because usually when we go back and we think about younger versions of ourselves, we want to heal the younger versions of ourselves. And now I feel like the younger version of myself would go, Brianna, wake up. You got this thing. This is yours. You have the thing. Enjoy it. So.
But he knows that. Like, that's also something he loves about you.
Yeah.
It isn't, like, unconditional love doesn't have a time limit on it.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, when you were talking about, like, earlier, like, there's a time limit on shit. And when I'm young and I have all the time, there's, like, this clock that's ticking. But as I get older, there's no finish line. There's no, in fact, half of it is fucking imaginary. Most of it's imaginary, right?
And that's the beautiful thing is that when I first read that question, I read it as the other way. Where do you picture yourself in 20 years? And that's what we can continually do. Like, who fucking knows 20 years from now, if we're lucky, where we'll be, you know? And I'm trying to think of what else 20-year-old me would have wanted for 40-year-old me. I think she'd want to be fucking cute.
Well, there you are where you thought you'd be, right?
Success.
That's fair.
I think 20-year-old me would be very proud of how little fucks I give as 40-year-old me. And I feel like that is a very common thread amongst women of a certain age. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think it just comes from being like, I'm too fucking tired. Well, I can't care anymore.
It's also like looking at Oz behind the curtain, right? At some point, I realized that this concept of power I've been ascribing to so that I would be awarded a piece of it is just an illusion. Like, it's just this system that's maintaining power at the top. And if I'm
so
a good
true.
Girl,
if I do
the thing, and if I am the thing, and if I sass the thing, and then someone will give me power. It's not possible to give power. It's not possible.
Totally.
They're rewarding me. They're making me feel, but all they're doing is keeping the power. All that's happening when you give me something that feels like power is keep me sucked into the fucking system where you have all the power. Does that make any sense?
By you think by someone at the top giving you power,
giving keeps, what feels like power.
Yes.
But
it's
not,
in fact, it's not giving away some of their power to make it equal. It's going, I am still have power over
yes.
you because I get to give you power.
I'm just,
is that, are we all following? Yes.
Okay. They don't exist. It's a podcast. So at some point, I think most of us are able to just go, wait a minute. You're just recycling the same fucking power.
Yeah.
When you say you're sharing it with me, you're just taking it right back again because then I got to go earn more of it. Fuck that. I'm going to go get my own.
Yeah.
And so instead of waiting for them to bequeath unto me some fucks to give, I decide I shall go create my own fucks and give them, sow them as I so choose.
Exactly. It's not the no fucks. It's going, I get to go, who gets this in their penny jar?
That is
yeah.
my fuck to give where I want.
Yeah, I think 20-year-old me would be very proud because I think that 20-year-old me was very scared about who thought what of her. Mm-hmm. I think fucking 30-year-old me, I think 35-year-old me cared more about what people thought than 41-year-old me does.
So what do you think you learned in the last 20 years that surprised you? That was like not a goal to learn, but something you were like, whoa, I'm sure happy I learned that.
That I don't need to be liked by everyone. I think when I was younger, and again, so many of these things I learned very recently, like within the last few years.
Into the
mic. I was going to burp.
Oh, okay.
If I burp, I'll do it into the mic. I promise you guys. There we go.
There we go. Thank God.
Sorry. Sorry if that is like some people just can't with the burps. I should have warned you all. You know how some people just have things? They're just like, oh, it's too much of an ick.
Yeah.
It's going to make them hurl.
Some people are like that with circles. And I realized that after I had, there's a thing where people are actually reactive about circles. And I have tattoos of circles all over my arm. And somebody was like, could you please put that away? Because I have this. And it's like a thing. It has a name. And I can't remember it. It's like triptych.
I had a neighbor that had
Wait, somebody knows it. You are allowed to say something. What was it? Trichotillomania. Thank you, Scott.
Oh, wow.
Trichotillomania is you can't stand
circles.
I thought
you just threw that out. Is
yeah.
Is it this word that I know? A word that I've never heard in my entire life?
Hi. Quick, hi. Sorry, hi. This is the narrator, and the reason we've never met before is because they've never been so grotesquely wrong before. Trichotillomania is actually a disorder which involves recurrent and irresistible urges to pull out body hair. The word they wanted was trypophobia, which is a strong physical and emotional reaction whenever someone sees patterns made up of holes or spots or circles. Thanks. Okay, bye.
So, sorry, segue that was not a segue. It was a complete diversion.
Oh, I was just burping.
Burping, right. Back to you learned that you don't need everyone
yes.
to like you.
I don't need everyone to. I used to think, I used to pride myself on being well-liked. And I used to, this is a big one. I used to pride myself on being able to make people like me. People who didn't like me, I would always be like, I can turn them. I'd know the right thing to say. I'd know how to like make them soften. Now, making somebody who's like hardened at you because they're kind of insecure is different than somebody not like you, choosing to not like you. Somebody who's like kind of hard around you because they're insecure, you can make them feel safe and therefore they can soften. In my experience, people who choose not to like you, I used to pride myself on going, I'm going to change their minds. And now I'm like, eh. Hey, man, if they don't want to be a part of this party, that's their choice. But before that, the idea of someone not liking me it would keep me awake at night.
Now, do you think that comes from healing trauma?
Yes.
Because that is definitely a traumatic response.
Yes.
Is
people
I'm going to right? find the one person who doesn't like me in this room and make sure they get my attention.
Or because I don't feel safe.
I'm going to, yeah.
yeah.
Yes. Somehow that affects me when I am disliked.
Yeah. I don't feel safe when I'm disliked.
Yeah. I didn't feel safe. I've now learned that what it is expectations. When someone has expectations of me,
yeah.
I don't feel safe because I am convinced I can fail somehow and then I will be unsafe.
Someone has expectations of you.
That
don't
means
feel
I can.
Safe.
No.
Really?
Yeah. Because
really?
I don't usually know what they are.
Okay. So
especially if they haven't clearly communicated them. I get very like, I'm supposed to do something right
even
now.
Even in friendship? Even in close friendship? Even in relationship?
That's why I don't have a lot of close friends. Because my best friends are people who are like, here's what I need from you.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. Okay, thank you
yes.
for telling me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the people who have that the people that are like, and then 5 years later I go, I hear, how could you not know?
Yeah, no. And to me, you know what's new to me is I think I feel like I was very similar to that in friendship. And I often thought, and you know this, like my deep-seated fear is that all of my friends are mad at me. I think that's maybe a lot of people's fears. And I now am in the process of learning, but have, you know, been teaching myself that, pardon me, I have been teaching myself that if a person is upset with me and doesn't come to me to tell me they're upset, they either need to get over it on their own, which is I'm like that and I do it all the time, more often than not, or it is their responsibility to come to me and tell me they're upset. It is not my job to go around to all of my friends that I think are mad at me and go, is there something that I've done that you're mad at me for?
Dude, and that goes both ways.
Yeah.
That's been the other thing for me because I used to be the very like, no, I'll just sit over here and pout until you notice yeah. that I'm mad at you.
Yeah.
Because I'm too, and now I'm like, no, you have the balls to tell that. Like there was a thing that happened where I was like, no, if I don't have the balls to tell that person this thing was a problem, then nobody else go up to that person and say, you hurt Kim's feelings when you did it. Like, no.
No,
no, no, no. If I'm not willing to be the solution, then I get to hang on to the problem.
And also, when I have an experience of being upset with somebody, often I just can get over it. Yeah. It's okay to just be mad at your friends. It's okay to be mad at your friends. It's not okay for something that really hurts your being that is caused by a friendship. I think that's something you want to adjust. But if somebody is like, you know, ghosted you on dinner plans, or we get mad at our friends fucking all the time. But, you know, they're boys.
That's one of the things I would say. That's my thing that I've learned that I didn't think I would learn because I didn't even know it, is learning to recognize when my ego is masquerading as self-care. When my ego is like, a lot of times when I get mad,
yeah,
I'm learning to recognize, am I mad or was my ego hurt? And I'd say 70% of the time it's because I'm just butthurt and I should shut the fuck up.
I'm just hurt.
And if I wait on it, that doesn't mean that my feelings aren't valid.
That's right.
It doesn't mean that I don't have the right to go, oh, honey, you're right. That is painful. It is. Yeah, I'm feeling shame and embarrassment and disrespect.
Sorry, I keep burping, you guys.
That's okay. It's good for
so
you.
So what would, yes, to segue this back to our topic,
yes,
what would 20-year-old self
20 years
do?
Ago, 32
yeah,
years
old. Sorry, 20
yes.
years ago,
yes.
self, what would they do?
Ooh, she got angry.
Yeah.
Angry. I was a very, it's funny, I remember having a psychic talk to me before that. It was before my daughter was born. So, yeah, no, maybe it was 20 years ago. And she was like, you have such anger. She was drawing over this, that she would do it with crayons, and she just kept drawing with red over my eyes, red, red. And she's like, such anger. Now, she also called, like, she was creepy good. But I remember telling my high school best friend, I was like, it's so weird. She said I had anger issues. And my friend literally had to bend down. She was laughing so hard. I was like, I don't have anger. And that's now I make fun of it. Now, right, I'm like, oh, rage propels
rage.
Me. Feels like a
it's
hit.
My fuel.
Oh, thank God. My sponsor can't get mad at me for getting high off this.
It's so funny because I also don't resonate as being an angry person, but I think that my male friends would consider me an angry person, but I think that what they see as anger is actually assertiveness.
Well, and also because the first three times you said it nicely, they didn't fucking listen.
Yeah.
So you have to tell them to shut the fuck up. And they're like, woo, yeah, why are you so angry?
But it's like, I think when I was 20, I really hid my anger really well, which ended up me feeling hurt, alone, sad. I think it was a lot of things that weren't useful. And I do think anger can be really useful if you give yourself an opportunity to dig down in it.
Yeah. And if you look at a solution, mm-hmm, and honoring it as impulsion, as opposed to looking at it as an excuse and not letting it. Because for me, we've talked about this, anger is a secondary emotion. Mm-hmm. My anger is a response to my grief and my fear. Always.
Victoria's giving us the 1 minute finger.
We have 1 minute?
1 minute.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Well, anywho, I am a different person than I was 20 years ago, but I like me so much more now.
Oh, I'm so grateful for me, but also I've started doing this thing where I carry around a little picture of myself from when I was younger, because I heard this actually on this show called Stutz. I don't know if any of you saw that on Netflix. It was an interview of Jonah Hill and his therapist. And the therapist said he took out a big picture of Jonah Hill from when he was young. And Jonah Hill's like, oh, I just get so upset when I see this picture of myself. I don't want to be that anymore. And the therapist said, you have to bring your younger self with you everywhere you go. It's wonderful that you're a new person and that you have all these adventures, but your younger self gets to come too. So that's what I want to remind all of the listeners, is that it's important that we have growth, and it's important that we move forward and we become bigger and better than we ever thought we could be. But it's also important that the younger versions of ourselves get to come too, and that they don't feel left behind.
I love you, Brianna.
I love you, Kim Rhodes.
Yay.